listening to Latin Life Denver Radio, bringing you not only great music, but who's who, what's what, and who's doing what in Denver's vibrant Latino community and throughout Colorado. Live, right here, every Thursday night for the 6 o'clock hour, Mountain Standard Time. And when you're not tuned into KZKO, be sure to check out LatinLifeDenver.com for more exciting stories.
Welcome back to the Latin Life Denver Radio Show, live on KZKO The Vibe. I'm Joel Contreras, your host for tonight. You're listening, like I said, to the Latin Life Denver Radio Show, your main source of the Latino 411 in the Mile High City. You know, human trafficking is one of the world's fastest growing criminal activities, with billions of dollars being made by predators who lure women, girls, and boys into forced sexual, drug, or gang activity. And it's not just happening in other parts of the world or even other parts of the country. It's happening right here in Denver, right here in Colorado. In 2014, 88 children were recovered from traffickers just right here in our home state, according to statistics provided by the Joint Law Enforcement Task Force. You know, the Justice Department estimates that 110,000 to 300,000 children are at risk of being trafficked, while the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children estimates that a trafficker can make up to $250,000 per child per year. That's amazing. Angela Sandoval Graff is the president and founder of Chosen Advocates Associations. She's also an RN and healthcare professional and received the Florence Nightingale Award in 2009. Additionally, Angela has developed a proactive empowerment skill set, which has become the foundation for her drive and heart to build a medical, rehabilitative, restorative facility and community for sex trafficked survivors. Angela joins us to talk about this epidemic and what's being done. Welcome to the Latin Life Denver Radio Show. Angela, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Joe, for inviting me. It's an honor to be here.
You know, tell us why you decided to get involved in this line of work.
Well, you know, it was really an awakening for me whenever I learned that this was happening in my community. And it was more shocking that it was happening to domestic children in our community. I thought it was children from faraway lands or foreign or, you know.
Well, that's what we think.
Yeah,
we think they come from Russia or Albania and they're brought to the United States.
No.
But you're saying that's not the case.
No,
they're actually
the case.
Kids that are recruited
domestic children.
Here.
Yes.
Domestic children right
yes.
here in our own communities.
In our own country. And in the United States alone, it's like $9.6 billion.
Of money that's made by traffickers?
Yes.
That's just astonishing because I don't think people know about that. How do they do this? How do they recruit these women?
Well, human traffickers are very sophisticated. There's different kinds of traffickers. They can be called the guerrilla pimps, where they're forcing and kidnapping and coercing a fraud type of situation. There's the Romeo pimps that pretend that they're a boyfriend. They'll, you know, romance the child and make them to believe that they are a boyfriend or an ancestral type of father. And then once they care for them in regards to the basic needs, once they get them to a certain point, then they turn around and tell them, "You're working for me." They prey on the most vulnerable children and women and men.
Are there runaways involved?
Absolutely. About 65% are runaways.
And so they pick up on these girls and boys and manipulate them.
Absolutely, they do.
And how many are there? I mean, you mentioned that there's a lot of money to be made, but how many victims are out there?
There is so many victims that it could be up to 300,000 that are at risk a
just
year
here in the United States.
Here in the United States. And that number is kind of a shot in the wind because of how low-key human trafficking is.
And why is that?
You know, because it's just hidden. A lot of people we're not in a generation where it's community anymore.
But you would think with social media and Facebook, everybody knows everybody's
business
these days.
Well, that's how traffickers will lure these children. And the worst thing that you can do to a child is isolate them. Parents isolating them, not knowing who is friending them on Facebook, who they're friending. You know, whenever we isolate our children, and, you know, social media can be used for good, but also these traffickers are using social media to lure those children in and pretend that they're something that they're not. And if we as parents and grandparents do not know what our children are doing or our grandchildren are doing and who they're friending, then that can be an easy prey. And it's not really, I mean, they look at for at-risk issues and at-risk children, but this can happen to the rich, the poor. It doesn't matter. It's an equal opportunity destroyer. And you can be black, you can be white, you can be Hispanic. It doesn't matter. You know,
really?
Obviously with the stats that
A particular type of person that's targeted.
No. You know, usually at-risk is a big one whenever there's runaways. It's about 65%. Of these traffic victims. However, with the stats from the CSEC report from the Rocky Mountain Innocence Loss Task Force, there was children that had two-parent family homes, single-parent family homes, were raised by a relative and then also raised by the state. So there was children that had two family homes.
And yet they were victimized and became victimized into the human trafficking system.
Yes.
That's just astonishing that could happen. You know, I think most of us in Denver and in this country are in denial of that this could be happening next door. But yet you see a news report every once in a while about women that were here in West Denver not too long ago.
Right, that were kidnapped and raped, and they were in a garage.
Right. And I'm like, it was four of them?
Yeah, there was four of them, naked and duct taped. I mean, who wouldn't know that was happening in their next door? I mean,
right here in West Denver. You know, not too far from these studios.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just astonishing. And nobody knew. None of the neighbors were aware.
No.
And you know, how many of these type of situations exist in Denver and in most American cities? I mean, is this commonplace?
There's so much more that's going on. But the issue is our community is not aware of the indicators. There's a big quote that says people die because of lack of knowledge. Whenever you don't understand what this issue is and you think it's happening in foreign lands, you know, it's kind of you're going through your everyday life. It's all about you getting your job done, taking care of family, and, you know, paying bills and doing your everyday thing. But if you're not aware that this is happening in your families, in your community, it's really hard to identify. So it's really important to get educated, and that's where the awareness campaign that we have initiated over the last year and a half to the grassroots community to, you know, talk to the Hispanic community, talking to the African-American community, talking to the Caucasian community, letting them know that, hey, over the last 2 years with the stats, with child rescues, juvenile rescues, this is not just women and men and labor trafficking. This is child sex trafficking rescues, that hard data that is affecting each and every ethnicity in our Denver communities. So talking with them about that and letting them know even those types of numbers that are happening, it really wakes them up. Especially with this summit, it really brought a lot of education to our community and people that are professionals dealing with the public.
I want to talk more about the summit, but I still want to get a little bit more information on these indicators that you talk about that people should be aware of that might – we talked a little bit about social media and Facebook and who the kids are friending. But what are some other indicators that maybe your child might be falling into this trap or that it might exist in your neighborhood or next door to your house? What does somebody look for?
Well, you want to look for – I mean, it could be male or female. You want to look for someone that has, you know, a lot of children around them. It could be adults. That children that don't really look like they're nourished
them.
Or they belong to them, or, you know, that are a lot of these traffickers get them hooked on drugs so that they can keep them dependent. So looking like at those types of issues, if someone is unkept, if it feels wrong, it might be wrong. So even with children that are getting approached by these traffickers and they're talking to them about, you know, sexual issues or just something that doesn't feel right, then obviously children need to be taught to tell somebody about that. Because if there's inappropriate conversation that isn't just kind of a normal conversation, then, you know, it's obviously wrong. Those are indicators as well. But traffickers, they can be... you know, They can be black, white, yellow. It doesn't matter
what
men, women. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. So,
well, you know, you often hear parents tell their kids to not talk to strangers and not do this and not do that. But how should you talk to your kid about maybe something that's happening on Facebook or somebody who's approached them? You know, do you tell them, hey,
if it feels wrong, it might be wrong. And I'm one of those parents. I might be a little bit overbearing, I would say, sometimes with my children. But if they're on social media, I have their passwords. And so I want to see who's reaching out to my child and who's trying to befriend my child. I'm going to be nosy like that because I already know what this ugly beast of an issue is in my community. And I know that I have beautiful children, and I am just, no, if they don't know somebody, someone from a different state or someone that doesn't go to school with them, someone that is just off the wall trying to befriend them, I'm like, wait, how do you know this person? You know, what do you know about this person? Do you really know if that's really the boy or the girl that you're talking to? Or do you think that that could be like an older person, or that could be somebody totally in disguise? You know, I have those conversations with my children, and they do know exactly what this is.
So it's important that parents educate their kids to learn about who they're talking about. Don't not just believe everything they see on the internet or on their monitor.
Yes, they have to.
And so they have to be told that kind of stuff to look out for that kind of stuff, like what you do with your kids.
Yes. And I think prevention is also another key indicator too. I think self-defense, getting your children, even yourself, learning self-defense techniques and, you know, understanding what those things are to be able to defend yourself. Because we live in a fallen world. You know, this is not, you know, all of the communities taking care of everybody's children, everybody knowing everybody's name. We've gotten away again from community. And so it's important for us to, you know those self-defense techniques and get in a self-defense class.
A lot of these victims are snatched right off the street.
Mm-hmm. And so they look for those children that are like with their head down, that are meek, that are timid. They look for them, especially the guerrilla pimps, as they call them, where they'll kidnap them and force them and put them into this kind of life. So they look at, is there someone that's really going to give me a good fight, or is this one going to be easier for me?
So you need to teach your kids how to walk.
Absolutely.
What kind of a stature this?
Eye contact all the time, looking at what's going on around you. Because if they see you doing those kinds of things, they know you're aware.
Uh-huh. And they're going to think twice.
Absolutely. Because they'll say, hey, May, that one might give me a good fight, you know, or might be a big struggle. Unlike someone that has their eyes down, slunching over, looking at their phones, not knowing what's going on around them.
Yeah, I can see how that can happen.
Oh, yeah.
That's just astonishing. You know, the Chosen Advocates Association, what's that about, organization that you founded?
Our organization, just the name, Chosen Advocates, we have to advocate for the voiceless. These children that are still in this kind of life, there is no hope. And the statistic says once a child is inducted into the sex slave trade, their lifespan is only 7 years because of the rapes and the traumas. And the stats is usually they're raped 20 to 40 times per day.
Are you serious?
Oh, I'm very serious. Yes, I'm very serious. And not only that, these traffickers don't want them going into the healthcare or the ER. And if they have abortions, sometimes they're just doing really unethical types of underground abortions. And so infection and different kinds of things that these children can come across, untreated HIV, untreated STDs. It's very real. And so our organization is looking to be a voice, to be an advocate for these victims, to bring community awareness at the grassroots level so that we can ignite that human fire, so that we can engage people to know about this issue, that it's getting too close to home. And if we don't do something about it and we turn a blind eye to it, it's not only going to affect our children, but it's going to affect our children's children. And so our first area of approach is awareness. And so we're bringing that awareness, and we're being advocates for these voiceless children. We're looking to build a holistic medical healing center once they get recovered. Right now, the Colorado Human Trafficking Council, Kate Bowman, she's one of the directors for that council. And what they are doing is they're bringing together leadership from community-based and statewide anti-trafficking efforts, and they're going to establish and improve comprehensive services for victims and survivors of human trafficking. And so they've invited me to come to their meeting actually tomorrow, and they're going to be addressing by January 1, 2016, making recommendations to the House and Senate concerning whether the General Assembly should establish standards and a process for the certification of organizations that provide services to victims of human trafficking, and to establish a grant program to which organizations that provide services to victims of human trafficking may apply for grants, including consideration of how such a grant program may be funded. So we're looking to build the first holistic medical center that it hasn't been done. It's pioneer work. It hasn't been done in our nation to specifically treat human trafficked victims.
A holistic center. It'll be based right here in Denver.
Yes.
And what kind of services holistically will you provide?
We will provide all aspects comprehensive services. So we will be partnering with social workers, caseworkers, law enforcement, prosecutors, obviously, nurses and physicians. We're going to take a holistic approach with psychologists, just different, a multidisciplinary team approach. We're going to establish the first human trafficking sexual assault response team. We're going to deal with a cohort group to be able to get evidence-based curricula and develop evidence-based curricula on what works and what doesn't work. So once we do establish the holistic medical center, we will have effective programs, policies and procedures, an overseeing human trafficking SART team, so that we can be able to objectively deal with this issue and help them with restoration.
Wow. It sounds like you have the business plan. All your ducks are in a row. You just need the funding for it.
Yes.
You know, your organization recently held the National Summit on Human Trafficking right here in Denver. Tell us, what was the objective for that summit, and were those objectives met?
The objective for that summit was to really bring advocates across the nation that have been advocating at the federal, the state levels to be able to bring about change in their communities and in their states. We had Dr. Laura Lederer, who was an advisor to the Obama administration when the Trafficking Victims Protection Act was passed in 2001, and she helped them organize a human trafficking task force at the federal level. And so she was one of our speakers, and she brought about research on the physiological implications when trafficked victims come out. She did a study on 333 survivors. And so what the summit was going to do was actually educate. We had medical professionals, we had probation officers, we had the Human Trafficking Council director, we had Colorado State Representative Rhonda Fields there, we had legislators there, we had pastors there, we had a lot of public servants there to be able to educate them on what human trafficking is, how it affects survivors, the physical and the physiological, psychological issues, how it affects parents, how the family reunification program should be implemented, what Chosen Advocates is going to do and implement here in our state, and where we need to be as a state. So we addressed that on our panel, and so we had awesome, awesome panel with a UN reporter, Celia de la Brene. She came in from New York. She was on a mission in Bosnia, so she brought about her expertise. Dr. Laura Lederer, State Representative Rhonda Fields. We had the FBI Innocence Loss Task Force Supervisor Daniel Steele, Sergeant Daniel Steele of the Denver PD, who's on these rescues for child victims. We had a former FBI agent who started a human trafficking institute, training institute for law enforcement. We addressed law enforcement mandating laws for them to be educated about human trafficking and human trafficker survivors, because a lot of times when these survivors get pulled out, especially children, they're treated like they're prostitutes, and they're not a prostitute. They're a victim. And so we address that, and where we're at as a state, we're not where we need to be, but we're on our way.
That's just amazing. How are you? How else are you getting? I saw that you were on PBS on, was it the Colorado? What are the PBS shows? How else are you getting the word out? Through the summit was one way. How was the attendance on that, by the way?
We had about 200 attendees, so it was really good.
Okay, good. And how else are you getting the word out about this?
Well, we're actually looking on doing a lot of different smaller like fundraisers, because we're looking to build the $1.5 million funding for our research and development phase of our program, to be able to service a cohort group of human trafficked victims, be able to establish the evidence-based curricula, be able to establish the human trafficking sexual assault response team. So we're looking to raise that $1.5 million. So we're doing a lot of different fundraisers, and it's going to be every quarter that we're going to be doing a fundraiser. So we have a very awesome fundraiser. I'm not going to announce it yet, but probably will be announced here in the next 3 weeks, but it's going to be very exciting for the community.
Yeah, it sounds like it's such a much-needed program and much-needed services. You know, you talk about a lot of this stuff almost in technical terms, but getting down to it, when you talk about response teams, what does that entail? Rescue response teams. How do they go about rescuing these kids, pulling them out of these situations?
Law enforcement is...
How do they become aware?
Well, law enforcement, the Rocky Mountain Innocence Lost Task Force, has done a superb job with rescuing over the last 2 years. But providing the services that these victims need, we're not there. And so,
wait, what do they need?
They need a lot of services. A lot of times if they come out with untreated STDs, it's a public safety issue first and foremost. If they come out with severe traumas because they've been raped over and over and over and over again. So the psychological issues that we have to deal with is something that is like changing their whole mentation.
That whole counseling?
Counseling, they need physiological. And if they're withdrawing, a lot of times if they're just putting them at a foster care, or if they're putting them in a juvenile detention center, or if they're putting them in a group home, especially if there's a way for them to like escape, usually within 42 to 72 hours, they'll end up back on the streets again.
So they just run away from the facility.
They run away because they don't know any other life than this kind of life. And a lot of times if they're withdrawing and you don't have professionals to identify that they're withdrawing from drugs, well, you have to be able to physiologically and psychologically address the physiological responses whenever you're withdrawing, because your body is looking for that next fix. And
so
you're
going to
go get that next fix.
But you can't incarcerate them.
Well, sometimes they do get incarcerated. But now our state is getting to that point where they're not going to be making arrests with juveniles. And so that's what this human trafficking council is looking at doing, not criminalizing them, but what's the next steps. So if there is a medical facility that has professionals to be able to withdraw them, to be able to meet their issues if they have untreated HIV that needs attention, if they have untreated STDs that needs attention, or they either have other disease processes like untreated asthma or something that hasn't been treated. Malnutrition is a really big one. You know, if they have untreated infection, like a blood disease, those different kinds of things, we'll be able to do different types of tests to see exactly what uniquely this patient needs and address the major problems first, and then go down the line and build like a plan and goals on how to address that. Because us, if our body isn't stable, then nothing else is going to be stable. And so we have to address the body, the mind, and the spirit of a person, especially with these types of victims. So that's what we're looking at doing.
And speaking of these victims, what age range are we talking about? And are we talking predominantly about men, boys, girls, women?
We're talking about children first and foremost. And so the age ranges could be 0 to 17.
What do you mean 0 to 17? Yeah. Is that they're abducted that young?
In our country, yes, the youngest has been 1.
1 years old.
Yes.
And how long do they usually stay a victim of this situation?
Well, if they're not rescued, then again, the statistic says that when they're inducted into the sex slave trade, especially somebody that young, a baby that young, their life expectancy is 7 years. And for a baby that young, I would say if they're inducted into the sex slave trade and there's things happening to this child in that kind of way where their body is not even built for that yet, I wouldn't say that their life would be longer than a year because they're so traumatized. Yeah. I mean, they're not developed. And to do something like that to a child?
Does that happen here in Denver?
It has. We have not rescued that young of age, but we have rescued a 9-year-old.
And are they predominantly girls, boys?
We have girls and boys.
And boys are victimized as well?
They are. And a lot of times with boys, it's more hidden because boys don't want to say that that's going on with them. Uh-huh. It's more of a masculinity type of thing. With the boy, it's more shameful. I mean, these boys are getting sodomized. Jerome Elam, who was a speaker, he's a survivor, and he was trafficked in 1970 by his stepfather to a pedophile ring. And he was 5 years old, and the first time that he got trafficked was at a truck stop. He was handcuffed to a sink, and he was sodomized for 6 hours.
Wow.
And it happened up until he was 16 years old. And then he left and he went into the military. He tried to change his life around. But back then, you wouldn't be able to talk about it. And he didn't talk about it for a long, long time. He had to get a lot of psychological help. But it does happen to boys more often than not than we even think.
You mentioned pedophile rings. Is that a big part of the situation?
Oh, absolutely it is.
And
absolutely.
How sophisticated are those rings and how,
very
how prevalent
sophisticated.
Are they? Really?
Very sophisticated.
In what ways?
These pedophiles, they can be politicians. They could be corrupt law enforcement. I mean, corrupt politicians, corrupt law enforcement, corrupt. It doesn't matter. If you're a pedophile, you can come from every side of the spectrum.
Wow. And they're organized through different groups that they create?
Yes.
And how do they network? Do they use the internet predominantly?
Well, there's a black internet that is actually more so used in the black market. So there is a lot of different
underground
black net. They call it the black net.
They call it the black net because it's underground.
Yeah.
And that's just comprised of these different pedophile rings?
Yes. The pedophile rings or traffickers or men just wanting, you know, children or sexual exploitation pornography sites. There was actually an Australian caseworker from Human Services about a month ago who got busted who had a pornography site, and he would get these kids. I mean, he was a caseworker from Human Services in Australia. He would get kids young as a year old do really just gross stuff to them and put it on the net. And all of these pedophiles and all of these like different types of traffickers were involved in it. And not only that, on the black net, they're asking for children, for girls, age 0, for boys, age 1.
To recruit. From other pedophile rings.
Blacknet is asking for that age group for boys and girls.
And what can be done about that?
Well, what could be done is us getting aware and saying, no, not in our communities, no more. We're going to stand up. We don't have to have fear. You know, I believe there's more good people in this world than there is bad. And just like Albert Einstein said, he said, this world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who stand by and watch.
That's where the problem lies.
Those good people that stand by and watch and turn a blind eye.
Not good.
Not good.
Angela Sandoval Graff, president and founder of Chosen Advocates Association, thank you so much for being on the Latin Life Denver radio show. It was a fascinating discussion. I learned so much. There's so much that needs to be done with this. How can people support what you're doing? How can they get involved with your organization?
Well, there's volunteer opportunities with the different projects that we're going to be doing and the campaigns that they're doing. They can go to our website at www.caa.org. projectrestoration.org. Our site is actually under construction since we had our summit and our event, so it's under construction for the next 7 days, but it should be up and rolling on all the new things that is going to be happening with the organization and our events and all kinds of good types of stuff.
You know, we are Latin Life Denver, so looking forward to everything you're doing. Anything we can do to support you, please let us know.
Absolutely.
This is such an important issue that it has to be dealt with. People need to know about this. Let's inform them.
Yes.
Angela, thank you again. And thank you for listening to us on the Latin Life Denver Radio Show. Until next week, hasta la vista.
Listening to Latin Life Denver Radio, bringing you not only great music, but who's who, what's what, and who's doing what in Denver's vibrant Latino community and throughout Colorado. Live right here every Thursday night for the 6 o'clock hour Mountain Standard Time. And when you're not tuned into KZKO, be sure to check out LatinLifeDenver.com for more exciting stories.